on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5 Live.
An interesting bunch of movies coming out this week. I Love You, Man. Well, I don't know whether I Love You Man's going to fit into that category. I suspect probably not. Crank 2, High Voltage.
See.
Yeah, good. We were speaking to Jason Isaacs on the programme yesterday.
Yeah, I feel bad, you know, because I know now for a fact that Jason Isaacs will be depressed because he said to you that he's depressed if either you or Mark Kermode aren't here when he listens to the podcast. So, literally, right now, he'll be half depressed, won't he? Because you're here. But Mark's not, so last week he must have been, I mean, really, just in a slough of depression, because it was myself and Colin Murray. I mean, I love Jason Isaacs. I've met him on a couple of occasions. He's a tremendous individual, as you know.
Yes, he's a terrific
But
chap.
I don't want to make him depressed by my very presence or by the very absence with which I'm filling.
You could talk up his film a bit.
I love his film. I love Jason Isaacs.
Okay,
so we'll see what we can do. Jason, don't stop listening.
Jason,
please.
You stay there, sir.
I know there are other people listening who are just as important. But since we now know that he's feeling a little bit down in the dumps
already.
I should mention,
by the way, next week, Stephen Fry and David Morrissey are going to be on the programme, which is... that's a whole programme.
Wow.
In fact, that's a whole day
that
you could fill with them.
Yeah, one of those would do for a week.
Now, the box office top ten is here. Now, you've seen four of these.
I'm doing very well for myself this week. It's because there are lots of kids' films, which I don't go and see, because I'm not a large family.
No, you might wish to comment on some of them, even if you haven't seen them.
I've got plenty to say.
Right, OK, so, well, we'll try Paul Blart Mall Cop, which, I mean, I know what...
It's Mall Cop, isn't it?
Is it Mall Cop?
I get it wrong often.
Pall Mall?
No, it's Pall Mall, but it's a shopping mall.
Are you American?
No, but I think the Americans invented mall, so I dare say we are sort of forced to say it.
You need to hold on to... You're like going into a well-known coffee shop and say, I'll have a medium-sized coffee.
Yeah, I do say that.
You do?
Well, let's just say Paul Blart Shopping Centre Cop.
Paul Blart, it's a rubbish film.
It's all right if you like a reasonably large man chasing around people. He's a mild mannered security guard in a shopping centre. Kevin James.
The Haunting in Connecticut.
Yes, a film that wasn't screened to critics, was just sent out at the cinemas and actually doing quite well. It's a kind of sort of Amityville horror. It's supposed to have really happened, haunted house thing, which Mark Kermode went to see with his own money, I know, because he's a critic and he had to, and thought it was okay.
Which is saying something, because you know instinctively that critics just don't like paying.
I don't mind. I like paying, as I've said. I went to see Young Victoria, as an aside, and I was pretty sure there was something wrong with the picture, but I wasn't absolutely sure. It just seemed very dark, but you can never be sure because it's set in the past and a lot of candles. And after about 5 minutes, I was convinced it actually was wrong, and I am one of those people who will go out and find a member of staff, which is always a long way away because there's only one person running the whole multiplex, found them and said, I think there's something wrong in Screen 5. So they get on the walkie-talkie, and I suppose one person who's looking in charge of all the digital projectors supposedly changed it. I went back in, it seemed to be better, and then slipped back into what it was before. So I thought maybe this really is what it's supposed to be like. I got home, I looked at a clip on the internet, which was clearly how it's supposed to look, and even on a small screen it looked brilliant and bright, so I'd clearly seen a film that wasn't right.
Maybe.
So I told the manager, I wrote to the manager of the cinema, who sent me two free tickets in an envelope with not even a single compliment slip. It just came. It was almost like a slap in the face. Go on then. Go and see two more films.
You're kidding.
Yeah,
so without a note at
all? Nothing. Not a note. I'm really sorry to hear that you had a dissatisfying experience. Just two tickets. I won't say which chain it was.
Maybe there's something that's a problem with Screen 5, because whenever I've been in Screen 5, everything seems to go wrong.
I've taken you off the box office chart. I'm really sorry for that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Dragon Ball Evolution.
Yeah, this is based on a series of manga comics, and I think it was also an animated series, and it's been made into a live-action film. And, it's gone in at number 8, which rather suggests it slightly missed its target audience, I would have thought.
The reason, by the way, I mentioned something wrong with Screen 5 is that when I was off last week, I went to see Monsters vs. Aliens.
With the extra cost.
With the extra cost.
For glasses.
Yeah, I mean, I know I went to one of the expensive cinemas in Leicester Square. Mm. One child, one adult, £23. And at this point you go, this is getting very, very expensive.
It is, yeah.
So we're sitting in Screen 5. It's supposed to start at 3 o'clock. It gets to 3:20, nothing's happened.
Really?
No adverts, no nothing.
Ah.
So in the end, I go, okay, you're right. So you go down about four floors, you find exactly the same. You get one guy,
yeah.
He gets on his walkie-talkie, he says, nothing in 5. And obviously someone somewhere presses a button and off it goes. Clearly the whole thing, I always think the projectionist tonight is Eric, and he's, you know, he's individually...
That's what I'd like to think.
...threading it through the
There
the
are
cameras.
Two teenagers running each multiplex.
That's what's happening.
Nothing, always, nothing against teenagers, but, you know.
Avoid screen five if you can. Yeah. It's Marley and Me at seven. Avoid that.
Yeah, Marley and Me. Well, unless you like dogs, although we had an email last week from somebody who loves dogs but said it was the only dog they wanted to die on screen. You see 14 years of this Labrador and it's and the
pets
ups and downs.
You hate.
Yeah. 22 Labradors apparently played Marley in this film, so look out for those.
Marley and Me is at seven. Race to Witch Mountain at six. I'm out a three-line whip to go and see that.
Well, it's a big Disney remake of its own 1975 film about two kids with telekinetic powers who are aliens, and this shouldn't have gone in at number six either. I would rather... I think there are two sort of family-aimed films that have not gone high enough in the charts this week. I think six is a bit disappointing for a big Disney film.
Knowing is at five with that really scary...
Nick Cage.
Well, a very scary Nick Cage, but also that slogan, what happens when the numbers run out?
Yeah. It's something to do with the time capsule that buried for the kids, and it has predictions of all the great disasters, including the end of the world. Although Colin Murray said that it was the worst film he'd ever seen last week and actually urged people to go and see it because of that.
We've got The Boat That Rocked, this week's number four.
Yeah, odd. A lot of goodwill in the room and full of fantastic, jolly performances by Nick Frost and Chris O'Dowd and various other good people. But it ultimately says very little about pirate radio or the times, which Richard Curtis is celebrating, or about the fact that apparently all women in the 60s were stupid and would sleep with any man. That's pretty much the message of the film.
How many times did you laugh?
Quite a few times. I laughed, as Mark did, at the name of one of the characters, which we can't say, but it's a childish laugh. And
That was the point. When the childish laugh came in, I thought, yeah. Well, OK, it's quite funny, but is that as good as it's going?
I want more to be said about it. It's an interesting era, and Richard Curtis chose not to say very much about that. And there is a questionable scene in it, which has been pointed up by somebody in Sight and Sound and elsewhere, which is basically where a man is about to sleep with a woman and sneaks out and tries to send another person in to sleep with her in the pitch black as a kind of trick, and so the younger one can lose his virginity, which some have suggested is effectively rape. So throw that into the mix and see what kind of Rich Curtis film you're watching then.
Yes.
Well, it's a suggestion.
It's interesting. The bit that I thought, I'm not sure about this. Right at the end, when you get the preachy
bit. Don't give the ending away.
No, but you get a preachy bit.
Mm.
Hasn't music done well? I apologise to Richard, because I love Richard very much. And
so do I.
I speak as someone who liked Love Actually.
Oh, all right.
But that preachy bit, that preachy bit at the end where we told how well music has done, I didn't.
I don't want to see the history of rock music at the end. It's a bit like something, you know, a dad would do at a wedding.
17 again is at number three.
Yeah, I thought it would be better. Zac Efron has a fan base. A lot of them were at the screening I went to see, younger people of the female gender, and they didn't squeal and laugh as much as I thought they would, because this film is aimed at them. It's about Matthew Perry, who becomes 17, i.e. Zac Efron, and gets to relive his life at high school. It's not at all bad, but I think Zac Efron will probably find a better vehicle.
Monsters versus Aliens is at number two.
Yeah, we're boycotting this, aren't we? Because you have to pay for the glasses.
So no, well, think, well, it's too late to boycott.
Well, I'm afraid it is going at number two, but yeah, it was a good voice cast, I think, in this. Lots of jokes for the adults.
Yeah, no, there was plenty. I even enjoyed Seth Rogen's character, which is saying quite
and
a lot.
And the character played by Kiefer Sutherland is obviously supposed to be a reference to Dr. Strangelove. It's, you know, it's good when they throw... In fact, I wonder if there might be too much adult stuff in it. Not adult in the terms of X-rated, I just mean grown-up stuff.
And one listener sent an email suggesting that Mark Kermode, he of this parish, looks a bit like the president in Monsters vs. Aliens, as I think it's voiced by Stephen Colbert.
I think that's because Mark's hair looks animated.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it looks like it's been created by computer.
Anyway, the UK's number one is Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious. They were right to get them back one last time, or maybe not the last time now. It's the fourth instalment, but it comes before the last one. So it comes between two and three. So it's a prequel to three.
So it's two and a half.
And a sequel to two, yeah. It's not bad if you like cars. I mean, I felt slightly, you know, nonplussed by it, but I don't really get excited by cars. They're things that you drive to places rather than actually look at and get excited about. So it's a fetishistic film, but it obviously does appeal.
Andrew Collins is here doing some movies, but we'll say hello to Mark because he's almost certainly listening. This game you were playing with Colin last week, a cunning variation on the a game we were doing about 18 months ago where we just change one letter in a movie title. You were just removing a letter. Nice email from John.
Removing the last letter. It has to be the last letter.
Oh, it's very fundamentalist. Because the previous one gave us snacks on a plane, snakes on a plank. Yeah. My favourite being dial N for nerder. That was my favourite.
This one doesn't work for most films, which is why it's harder to
play. Although John in Exeter says this week's new releases actually give us an awful lot. I Love You, Ma.
Yep.
Goo.
Which
we're coming to. Before I Forge.
Yep.
And the inimitable In the Loo.
In the Loo, which is the first film. I wrote those down, and so well done.
Preempting
me. No, it's good. I'd much prefer somebody else to do it than me.
John Soper, you got there ahead of Andrew Collins.
Can I mention a big fan of yours who had a bit of trouble last week when you weren't here? Rob Perkins is a listener to this programme and a great fan of you and Mark's bit. And he sent an email in which Colin read out, but only halfway down and didn't get to the end. And at the end, Rob Perkins had asked if we, in your stead, would propose to his girlfriend for him on air so that he could play the podcast to them, to his girlfriend, Joe Hill.
What a way to go.
Right? Well, Colin didn't read it out, so we didn't know. So after the show, he emailed me separately and told me what had happened and asked if I could do it on the podcast that I do with Richard Herring. And we did, but we did it. We do it in a slightly different way to the way you do your podcast.
Yes.
Strong language and adult themes from the start, our podcast, which is one behind yours this week, I noticed, in the iTunes charts.
Right, okay.
Literally one behind.
You've been looking at.
Anyway, we look a lot. You don't need to. You can be kind of self-satisfied about
it. We're probably all behind the Now show.
Anyway. Yeah. Anyway, so we did it for him, and unfortunately it wasn't really suitable. But he did propose to her last night, and she said yes. But he didn't use our podcast, and he asked if I could at least mention it so that he will at least hear it mentioned on the podcast this week.
So congratulations.
Rob Perkins has proposed to Joe Hill, and she said yes.
That's a nice kind of heartwarming
there you go.
Moment.
Yeah.
And how can I access your podcast then?
Just go to iTunes, or that's the best place to find it. Yeah.
And Rob Hillier says, one more, I just quite like this, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
That's good as well, yeah, that's good.
Should have been mentioned. Anyway, let's do In the Loo first.
In the Loo is the film of the year so far for me. It is spun off the BBC Four comedy The Thick of It, which is a Westminster set comedy produced by Armando Iannucci and directed and written by him and co-written with Simon Blackwell, Jesse Armstrong and others. It's... this is the film version of that, basically, and they expand out what we normally see, the Westminster Village, and it's about the middle people. You never hear of the Prime Minister, but you see a lot of his Director of Communications, who's a bit Alistair Campbell-like, although Campbell doesn't like that to be said, played by Peter Capaldi, Malcolm Tucker, who is kind of the star of the show, really. He swears all the time. We'll hear a clip in a moment where he swears all the time.
Have you checked it through?
It was checked. We double-checked
you'll know
it.
You'll have to go on a course.
We double-checked it. We really did. Okay. It had already been done, but we did it again just to be careful. It's a symphony of beeps. In fact, let's just hear it. Let's just get this out of the way. This is. Imagine this without the beeps. This
oh,
is
no,
Mount...
No. Oh, started. Friends. Right, OK. The bottom line is...
Oh,
that...
God, I hate that phrase. Bottom line. I mean, we're not in retailing.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Michael's quite right. I do apologise. I won't use that again. The bottom line is that President is going to the UN. This will be the vote to commence military intervention. And the Prime Minister has decided that we should join him. Go back to your desks and prepare to start briefing now.
Michael, do you mind if we use your office?
What?
For a couple of minutes?
Yeah, Michael, sorry. Bottom line is, can you come out again?
Might need to turn the music off.
Yes. Right.
OK, so this is all going to spin along from here, and we're going to have a vote, and we're going to go to war, and we're going to fight people, and we're going to kill them, and our children are going to get killed. And this is exactly the sort of thing that I didn't want to do when I went into politics. This is the opposite of what I wanted to be doing.
Well, that's exactly why you have to stay in government, so you can influence things. In here, you can influence things, you can delay things. Out there, you're just going to be another mouthy, shouty man that people don't want to make eye contact with. Remember Mary? Remember what happened to her? She took a stand on health. Everybody decided that she was mental.
Because the Sun showed a picture of her with wide eyes and her head on a cow.
Yeah, well, I happened to find that that was a particularly powerful image. Look, the Prime Minister of this country, right, he's not a Viking, is he? He doesn't drink blood. He doesn't go around biting tramps.
I know the Prime Minister isn't a Viking.
Unlike me, he abhors physical violence.
That's a very good clip. And to be honest, it doesn't really matter what Alistair Campbell wants us to think. That is based... It's somewhere between him and Damien McBride. That's who it is.
And he is the only character who swears. The rest of them are just trying to get on with their jobs. And he rules, basically, just as we imagine Alistair Campbell used to rule. And this one, it opens it out. They end up going to New York, to the United Nations, and to Washington. So you get a bit of American politics as well, which is very interesting because it's quite slick, whereas ours is a little bit bumbling, which is how it's portrayed. The characters are absolutely superb. It's brilliantly written, but then they allow the actors to improvise over the top, and so it's a real naturalistic feel the way it's done. If people haven't seen it on BBC Four, I dare say they really should go and probably watch the DVDs of it first. It's such a brilliant universe to get into. And once you have done, then you're ready for this, which is the feature length version. And Chris Addison plays the kind of one of the hapless advisors, and Tom Hollander, who we heard there, he's the MP who accidentally almost predicts a war in the Middle East by just saying that the situation is unforeseeable. I think that's what he says. Unforeseeable, which can be interpreted both ways. So the hawks in Washington and the doves both want a bit of this Brit to add a bit of gravitas to their cause. So he gets taken out to Washington. It's incredibly clever. It's political satire without using a sledgehammer. It's really subtle political satire, despite the amount of swearing you hear. It's actually very clever the way it does it, because it doesn't present anybody as the baddies. The baddies are all of us for allowing phraseology and jargon to take the place of actual policy, and that's really what it's about. And of course it has echoes of the Iraq war build-up, because they're trying to gather together a dossier, but they never mention Iraq. It's, you know, it could be any war, basically. It's incredibly terrible. Really, it's so much a cut above not just British comedy or British film, but just films. It's just, you know, there's so much thought in it, there's so much content, and it's funny. So, I mean, it's almost impeccable, I would
say. And if you're one of the people who thought, as many did, that you go and see something like Lesbian Vampire Killers, put together by very talented people, but you think, come on, the script is just... You know, I want to sit and think this is really clever. Sounds as though this is the perfect antidote.
It treats you as smart, and I think most people are smart if given half the chance, and, you know, we'll come to Crank 2 later, and that treats you as a Neanderthal, as you know, something that's just clawed its way out of the primordial swamp.
I heard Amanda talking to Nikki Campbell this week, and it's almost as though this is the perfect week to launch a movie which is all about the underside of politics and how manipulative it can be and how rubbish it can be.
Well, I mean, some ways, you know, you can't beat the real thing. The real thing is as ridiculous as any episode of The Thick of It. If it was happening this week, The Thick of It would all be about Gordon Brown's handwriting, and I hold myself fully responsible, which is why I've asked this person to take responsibility and resign. And all that
is
stuff.
Almost an Amado Inucci line. That,
I mean, in a way, he must be pulling what's left of his hair out. You know, it's better than what we wrote. But that's why I suppose doing war was a clever idea, because at least it takes it to another level.
And is it too sweary, or is,
no, I mean,
is it the most sweary film you've ever seen?
There's one of the funniest bits in it is a sweary bit. Now, I'm not the sort of person who thinks swearing is funny per se, but it's so creative, the swearing in this. In the same way that the insults were creative in Blackadder, in a much more family-oriented way. They are so... You think you've heard it all, and there's one in this that you'll have to see it to believe it, that is just... It's hilarious. It's proper, brilliant writing. It's Shakespeare. It's Chaucer. I mean, it really is. It's old English writing. It's brilliant.
Simon in Exeter says, hope you enjoyed skiving off Fozzie, and hello to Radio Gaga. Is this a joke from last week?
I don't get that one, but...
Saw Crank High Voltage last night, which we'll get to, I think, before...
Well, I saw some of it this morning.
Oh, OK. And it OTT'd the OTT of the first Crank. A bit too much at the end, but it was still brilliantly enjoyable. Jason Statham, or the Stath to his fans, is slowly dominating the pure entertainment side of moviedom, as he has at least three movies this year. Crank, High Voltage, 13, and Sly's rival Dirty Dozen movie, The Expendables, featuring the best cast ever. And then there's a whole list of movie titles with one letter missing, which we'll get to if there's time. However, some movies to do, including this one, which I was expecting you to trash.
Well, really. You know, I Love You Man is, let's be honest, guys are well served by comedies, especially American comedies. Most American comedies seem to be aimed at guys, like Knocked Up. They're not all bad, but there are a lot of them, I would say.
If nearly it's got
all
of Seth Rogen in it.
Yeah, this one hasn't, but it has got Paul Rudd in it, who's in nearly all of the other ones as well. He was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and he was in Knocked Up. He's in all of them. He's rather more charming, I think, even than Seth Rogen. I do like Seth Rogen. So I Love You Man is basically about Paul Rudd, who is a real estate agent, who is getting married to Zoe, played by Rashida Jones, and she's telling all girlfriends about it, and it's great, and they're getting together and having a big party and celebrating it, and he realises he's got no male friends. He's always had girlfriends, and he gets on well with women, but he hasn't got a male friend. He hasn't got anyone that he could call to be his best man. So he realises that he actually, you know, he should have a male. He's got no male friends to share the news with. So he turns to his gay brother, who's played by Andy Samberg, who basically says, you need to go on some man dates. That's the word for it. In other words, find a male friend. That's by meeting some men. You need to meet some men. So we'll hear them talking about it in this clip, and then we'll move on to the man he actually finds.
So what do? I mean, how do I meet friends? It's such a weird concept.
Well, I can do some recon around the gym. But you're gonna have to be aggressive about this, man.
Yeah.
Use the internet to meet guys. Get mom to fix you up.
I mean, if you see a cool-looking guy, strike up a conversation and ask him on a mandate.
A what?
A mandate.
Okay, you know what I mean?
No.
By that, I mean casual lunch or after-work drinks, okay? No dinner and no movies. You're not taking these boys to see The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, God, I love that movie.
So Paul Rudd is he's the reason why this film is good, I think. He meets, by accident, actually, has some disastrous dates. And he meets a guy called Sydney, who's a guy who lives down basically on the beach in a hut. He's a bachelor. He's cool. He's relaxed. He actually was the guy who was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, if you saw that. And he's everything that Paul Rudd's character's not. He's, as I say, relaxed. He's cool. He's got a guitar. He jams. And he brings out something in Paul Rudd's character that he hadn't got, because he's quite uptight, has his tie on most of the time. So they become really good friends. And what the film is about, really, is how that impacts, actually, on the two fiancés. In that, you know, his fiancée starts to think he's spending too much time with his new friend, even though she encouraged him to go and get a male friend. So it's about male friendship. A shared love of Rush is quite important. They both love the band, the Canadian band Rush.
That could be worse.
And so they jam and they play a lot of Rush. What really hinges on is Paul Rudd's performance, because he's one of these guys who tries to be cool and isn't, and he's very good at that. He's really good. It's a bit like the kind of comedy of embarrassment that Ricky Gervais has turned into an industry, really. And it's not as blokey as some of these films. You know, I don't know whether many women will particularly enjoy it, but at least, as I say, the gay brother character is there, so that's addressed. It's not just about, you know, you're being a bit gay, you know, that kind of thing, where they say that, because it's covered by this character who's actually far more together than Paul Rudd. The gay brother is totally together and totally comfortable with himself and with his sexuality and with his friends. So, yeah, much better than I expected it to be, and worth a look, but be prepared to be a guy when you're watching
it. A mandate, then, is just going out with a bloke. Yeah, it's just... Yeah. Going for a drink, is it, with a friend?
Absolutely, just having a male friend. And if you haven't got one, I mean, you know, this does happen. I'm sure this is actually out there. There are men out there, especially men who are in a relationship with a woman, who spend a lot of time with their wife or their partner, and where are the men friends?
Why do you think they chose Rush? Would that be the ideal choice?
It's the age thing, and because they're slightly uncool, and because then they are a kind of fairly male band. And so, you know, at one point, the two friends go and see Rush, who are genuinely Rush. You know, they're still there playing at a concert, and the fiancé goes, and she's completely left out of the whole thing because they're singing lyrics to each other and, you know, playing air guitar and having a fantastic time. So maybe that Rush were chosen as the ultimate sort of male bonding band.
Would you? Who else would you put in there? You know, gigs where you're most unlikely to see any women.
Well, I mean, yeah, heavy metal generally is a reasonably male thing, especially kind of young male genre, isn't it? You know, I suppose at one point, you know, if you went to the Reading Festival pre 1987, it would have been just blokes with beer mats sewn into their denim jackets and with extremely clean hair. You know, that's what you would have seen. And now it's very different. Everything's co-educational, isn't it? You know, men and women are everywhere. Men and women in pubs, men and women are everywhere. So actually it's harder and harder, I would imagine, to find places where...
The progressive society, is that what you're describing?
Yeah, that's it. So we live in a much better world now.
Okay, so I Love You Man getting a slightly higher reading than you might expect, but...
Do you want to do good or can we do... Just,
I think good... Look, it's got Jason Isaacs
in. Yeah, good's better than Crank.
He's disappointed to hear that it's you anyway.
I know he is. At least he'll know that I like his film and I like him in it very much.
Right, let's discuss good.
Well, you established in the interview with him, which is still available to listen to, which is a very good and fine interview, that this is a film set in the early era, Nazi era in Germany. It's a play by C.P. Taylor. I don't really know anything about the play, but it was written in 1981. And it's about two friends in Nazi Germany in the early days, before things started to get, you know, really bad, before the war was actually declared. And obviously Jason Isaacs is a psychotherapist, and he's Jewish, and Viggo Mortensen's character is not Jewish, and everyone in this speaks in an English accent. It's not one of those where they try and do German accents.
It's fascinating. They write in the blackboard in German.
Yeah, it's
but they speak in English.
I find that problematic. It's an English play. It's written by an English man, it's Scottish actually, but British anyway, and I find that odd. You know, where Tom Cruise played Colonel Stauffenberg, and everyone had to speak English in that because he couldn't do anything other than an American accent. And he starts out speaking German. Did you see the film?
No, I didn't see that.
Assassinating Hitler, Valkyrie. He starts out speaking German, and then it gradually morphs into Tom Cruise's accent, which is even worse. It's like pointing up that we're not going to do German accents here.
Would you rather them have a German accent?
I would.
Or just speak in German with subtitles?
No, that would be the very best thing. I mean, genuinely, I thought The Reader, which is a German book about a German subject, should have been made by German filmmakers, not British filmmakers, and start all German speaking German. It's... Why not? not? I don't know why. I still don't know why. This would have been great if it was all in German. It's not. But nevertheless, it's a very, very sentence of actually better than The Reader, I think. It's more interesting because it's about friendship and how that is completely ripped apart. And Viggo Mortensen's character is just an English professor who gets sucked into the Nazi machine and is made an honorary member of the SS. You'll hear them speaking now. This is Viggo Mortensen speaking to Jason Isaacs when the cracks are just starting to show.
What promotion?
Didn't I?
Oh, it's nothing.
No, maybe. No, no, come on, come on. You can tell Uncle Morris.
They've made me head of department.
That is fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thought you said there was no way they promote you unless you... Well, not you too, Johnny.
Well, it's just...
Tell me it was pure self-interest. That I can understand. Please, don't tell me you agree with them.
It doesn't matter if I agree with them. The fact is they're in power. At least I'm doing something. I mean, if we want to change anything, steer them in the right direction, we can't stay sitting on the sidelines.
We? I don't think I'll be steering anyone in the right direction because I don't actually get a vote anymore. In case you haven't noticed, I'm not a citizen. Actually, legally, I'm not a full human being, so I'm stuck on the sidelines. What are you going to do? Give them a list of edifying books to read.
Look, if you're really so pessimistic, why don't you go abroad for a year or two until things settle down? There are many countries where you could practice. You've no ties here.
No ties. I was born here. I fought for this country. I am as German as you. How dare you? Why should I leave? Sorry.
It's a really interesting film. It's a theatrical play, and so there's something theatrical about the film. It's a lot of people talking. Now, I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. I'm quite happy to see people talking if they're saying interesting things, and they are. It's quite slow in places, but you do believe in the friendship of these two men, and you do believe the way things are going. You know, as I say, he doesn't want to join the party, Viggo Mortensen, but he still gets sucked into the machine because the Nazis, the Führer, in fact, likes a book that he wrote, a novel, which is about mercy killing because he has a very ill mother. Played by Gemma Jones. And, of course, the Nazis are interested in that for completely nefarious reasons. Very unsavoury. And he gets, as I say, sucked in. He writes them a paper. And meanwhile, poor old Jason Isaacs is getting run out of town, effectively. We know what's going to happen to him. So it's a thinking person's film. And definitely worth a look. It's, so, you know, as I said last week, actually, about 50 Dead Men Walking, which is about, you know, the Northern Irish Troubles, they're almost a set of clichés now around some of these very serious and worthy subjects, and in a way there kind of is around the Holocaust movie. That's not supposed to be a glib statement, it's kind of true. The more you see, the more you could become inured to the horror of it, but this film, like all the others, hits you in the face at one point. So,
and it is fascinating, and you will come out and you will want to discuss it, but as I mentioned to Jason Isaacs yesterday, I ultimately wasn't quite convinced that it was, in Viggo Mortensen's case, that even though he was an English professor and he was only an honorary member of the SS, he did have the gear. You're almost expected to believe that he didn't really know quite how awful things were.
I'm not quite sure I went that far. It may be the liberal mind of the person writing the play, kind of wanting it to be true that there was this man who genuinely was kind of innocent, even though he had an SS badge on. So, yes, you have to take that a little bit. You have to suspend your disbelief a little bit just because the play... The point is made better if he is a good man.
And look out for Mark Strong again, mentioned yesterday.
And Stephen McIntosh. It's some great British actors.
Fantastic performances. Yeah. So, look, we've got 90 seconds.
You don't need long to do Crank 2. It's a sequel to Crank 1 in which Jason Statham's character has to keep his adrenaline up and at one point has to have sex in public just to keep his adrenaline up in order not to die while he finds the people who did this to him. This time he's got an artificial heart put in. He has to keep, well, in the clip, which is not worth playing, frankly, and let's not play it, he has to use some jump leads on his tongue and his nipple to... sort of charge himself up.
Don't try this at home.
It's not without style. I managed 26 minutes of this, and I paid this morning to go and see it because it wasn't shown to critics. I don't know why, because critics aren't going to sink a film like this. It's got its audience ready made. I lasted 26 minutes. I thought it was not badly made. It was exciting, but it seemed to me to hate women. There's a scene, a shootout in a strip club where loads of people get shot, and I think we're supposed to smile at the fact that a woman with artificially large breasts is shot in the breasts, and you see kind of silicon and blood coming out of them. I think it was supposed to be funny.
So, and is that why you walked out?
I walked out at that point. I thought that was a time to walk out for me. I'm not a Nuts reader or a Zoo reader, and if I was, I'd probably think that was hilarious, and I'm glad I'm not, and I think they should probably have some kind of lesson in citizenship.
They should all hang their heads in shame.
But anyway, it'll do well, I'm sure.
And, OK, so I know the answer to this, but movie of the week?
Yeah, In the Loop is absolutely terrific, and it's done well in the American festival circuit, so hopefully it'll do well abroad. I'd like that.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.